This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome back to the 45th. It's Rabia here, and I'm here with Susan. Hey, Susan.
Hey, Rabia.
I'm feeling particularly hoarse today. I don't know why.
Oh, God.
Probably because I've been screaming at my TV, but...
Not the COVID?
I don't have the COVID. I have the rage. I have the rage because the shit show is not over. How are you doing?
Pretty rage-filled, too. Yeah, no. It's not rage-filled. A little more apprehensive, probably. I honestly, last week, when we recorded, that light was at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
And my worst-case scenarios have not come to pass. I thought we were kind of getting close to out of the woods. And I still think we are. But the optimism I felt dissipated over the past week as it became clear that... So I think what it was is I had convinced myself of this theory that if Biden just won by enough, if his popular vote percentage was just enough to make any fuckery impossible, then it wouldn't happen. That right. there was some kind of line that they would not go beyond. Right. And I realized now that was a very naive view because... Biden did crush it. Not as much as one of hope, but he crushed it. Like, it's not close. There's no popular vote question here.
Yeah.
And yet.
I want to dig more into that, what's going on right now, where we are with the election results, because, I mean, we continue to get more results as the days go by and where we are with the electoral count and the transition. But let's start with COVID because we... I'll have to start with COVID. All right, so we are at 10.4 million cases as of this morning with 241,809 deaths in the United States. We have about 60,000 people are currently hospitalized, and we have been hitting about over 100,000 cases a day for the last, actually 9 days in a row now. I think yesterday we hit almost 140,000. So things are kind of spiraling. I mean, like the outbreak, it's just like we are hitting, and I feel like we're not even quite in that winter cold influenza season yet.
We're just ramping up to it.
And I don't know what, I mean, I guess it's just that people are maybe getting fatigue. And so they're just starting to like see each other again, or maybe it could be because people went back to school, university, schools reopened. I don't know, but it's really bad.
It's a combination of all of that. And also the fact that diseases like this are seasonal. They come in waves. They come in not fully predictable, but you know, you can understand the general patterns. And they've been saying, Fauci's been saying since what, spring, that like, I'm worried about the winter. We had some bad spots over the summer, but you know, it was checked out and they kept it down. This time they're not keeping it down. And I think the worst outcomes are about to come through.
Yeah, that's what all the experts are saying. They're saying we are going to see, this is going to be like the darkest part of this nightmare, what we're entering into right now.
Of course, people have gotten used to like taking actual reasonable safe risks because they have spent in many states, you know, past what, 4-5 months, being able to do things that could be risky, but they're reasonable risk and it was not a problem. But they're only not a problem when community spread is at a much lower level than it's going to be soon.
Well, I mean, it's also, I mean, like, you know, a lot of the spread is happening when a lot of people who are getting sick and dying are like not even people who even wanted to take the risk, right? They're people who got infected because other people took the risk and then brought it back into their homes or communities. And also because like maybe because it's getting colder, people are staying indoors more. I don't know what's going on, but we do know what's going on. I mean, look at this latest outbreak coming from the White House that, you know, the election night, that party that Trump put together, he invited apparently 400 people last Tuesday night to the White House. Only like 100 and some showed up. However, it was enough that it caused an outbreak. And so we have a new White House outbreak. This is the second super spreader event this man has put on recently. You've got Ben Carson got sick, Meadows, the chief of staff, an advisor named Bossie, 5 aides and another advisor. I mean, like, it's like almost a dozen people.
I like how VP is managing to avoid. Well, no, there was some. Yeah, Pence's office had like what? Didn't Mark Short get it? But still, Pence himself has somehow managed to steer clear of it, which is, you know, kind of impressive. Like he's in the danger zone and somehow managing to stick to a plan that keeps him getting infected so far.
Although, listen, a couple days ago they said Pence was announcing that he's going on vacation. So I don't know. I mean, maybe the vacation is like well timed with like an infection. Oh,
that's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, but he'd already be gone. He can't wait that. He can't delay that.
Can't delay what?
COVID. If that's what he's.
The thing is, like, this is a really weird time to go on vacation, don't you think?
It's a super weird time, but I mean, that does make more sense. I was thinking, like, it was bizarre, but, I mean, if he was doing it overnight, I'd be like, yeah, that's COVID.
Yeah, no, okay, well, yeah, I mean, I don't know if it was on the schedule earlier. I'm assuming it would not be, because either way they knew this was the aftermath of an election. Not a good time to be going
unless
on vacation.
Unless he planned to lose, and then peacing out.
Maybe, I don't know. All right, well, some good news, a little bit of good news, is that Pfizer literally, like, in the last couple of days, or, like, right, I think it was a Thursday of last week or Friday, announced that they, a vaccine that they're testing had prevented more than 90% of infections in a study. And that's good. The vaccine development is looking good. Yesterday, I did see an interview, and I can't remember now which doctor, but he said that it looks almost inevitable that in the next 3-4 months we will have a vaccine, and now we have to think carefully about like distribution and access and those things. Trump and his supporters have turned this into a conspiracy that, oh, it's interestingly well-timed that right after the election, our father was saying it all along, we'd have vaccine by the election, and Pfizer waited until after the election to make this announcement.
Yeah, instead of claiming credit for it, the administration's doing that, but for Trump, instead of trying to claim credit. Mm-hmm. Him himself, though, he's blaming it as a conspiracy against him.
Well, they're kind of doing both. I've seen
the administration is. The messaging from the administration is that. But he himself, like, rages about how it's all conspiracy against him.
Conspiracy, yeah.
It's not something he did, it's something being done to him.
And the day that the news broke, there's a Pfizer executive that was interviewed, and he's like, I just got the results, like, last night or this morning or something. He's like, I didn't, you know. But I will say, I wonder if that would have made any kind of difference, like, had it come, like, a week prior or before the election. You think it would have had any kind of significance? Not to the tune of 5 million plus votes that Biden has won by.
No, I don't think so. I mean, we always knew, so it wasn't like a coincidence that came out then. They had to wait a certain number of days after their test subjects, wait, it's the wrong word, volunteers. What's the word for it?
Yeah. they're
volunteer guinea pigs. Got their vaccine shots, the second one. They had to wait a certain number of days before they could give results. So it wasn't like they could have gone sooner. They had to wait until that time period passed.
Yeah. Well, in what is kind of a heartening move, the first official move that President-elect Biden has made is this Monday. He announced the formation of his own transition COVID-19 advisory board to help shape their approach to managing the coronavirus pandemic. I mean, that is priority number one for him. And he knows that kind of nothing else can happen in this country. None of his other agenda can, like, I mean, like, he can't really think about anything else until this is managed. What do you think? I mean, I don't know. Like, they haven't put out any kind of specifics, but I was thinking, I know he's mentioned in the past during campaigning that he would want a nationwide mask mandate, but how, you can't do that with a states' rights country like this.
That's why you have to be the president. And as Obama said, with a pen and a phone, you have to work the networks, get coalitions together. You can't just enforce it. You can't just mandate it. But yeah. Doesn't mean you can't do anything. It means you have to do a complicated job of managing a federalist country and get everyone on board for the national good.
Yeah.
And sure, yeah, it's going to be harder in certain states, but it doesn't mean that he can't have a nationwide effort that will be effective to some degree.
Yeah.
So we are currently in Michigan, which I have now learned is the land that cannot make up its mind whatsoever about weather.
It's every season at once.
Twice a day. It's super annoying. For real.
My body is hot, but my, like, hands and feet are cold.
I warned you before you got here. Like, how should I pack? I'm like, pack everything because it's going to be 5 million temperatures. Anyway, this is what Ember Wave was made for.
Yep. Ember Wave is the first bracelet that helps you feel colder or warmer at the press of a button. It's kind of amazing. It's like your own little personal body temperature device.
And here in Michigan, in the fall, you're going to need both.
Yep. Ember Lab's mission is to bring thermal wellness to the world. They're passionate about using temperature to help every person feel better physically and emotionally.
Emberwave provides comfort in unpredictable climates and relief from stress and support for sleep. At the end of a long day, driving around talking to witnesses like we're doing now, Emberwave gives you the comfort you need to sleep no matter what temperature is going to be.
Look, sometimes we're in spaces like with other people who have totally different body.
Oh my God. That one room, like, was 5 million degrees.
You're right.
Oh my God.
Or my husband, I'm talking to you. And you need to have like your own kind of temperature control. But you know what? The other thing, Susan, is I actually feel this all the time. I will feel warm, except my feet will be freezing.
Oh, that's always my life.
Yeah. Or my hands will be cold. Yeah. So you take the Everwave. It's a bracelet. I have put it around my ankle, by the way. I have put it around my wrist and it has regulated my temperature like just beautifully.
And right now, Everwave is offering our listeners $50 off your purchase when you go to emberwave.com/45th. That's emberwave.com/45th.
Now, interestingly enough, you know, even among Trump supporters, I saw some polls in the last couple of days, even among Trump voters, they actually believe Biden can manage the pandemic better. So that's interesting. I thought there's more trust in Biden in terms of, so maybe that indicates that people will be willing to listen, if, especially when you're talking about, look, places like Utah, I mean, a lot of these red states are experiencing COVID way worse right now. The resurgence is way worse now than it is for many of the blue states. You've got Utah's a new mask mandate. North Dakota. You've got patients that's like when you hit like 7% in a hospital COVID, they consider that like critical. They're at 25% of hospitalization. So they are just like, you know, overwhelmed. And the governor of North Dakota has just decided to let COVID positive nurses that don't have symptoms keep working, which is insane to me. But
is it a matter of letting them or having no other choice? They want to keep the hospital.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It's probably a matter of human resources, right? Like they don't have a choice, but
like their preference wouldn't be to have COVID positive healthcare workers, but it's better than no healthcare workers.
Oh my God. That's just horrible. I have a friend who was, who's a nurse in North Carolina, and 1/3 of her nursing staff just tested positive for COVID. So, I mean, yeah, it's just like spreading. Anyway, another study that I wanted to touch on, because, you know, we talk about obviously the cases and the deaths, like there's nothing in between. Obviously, there's so much in between in terms of ongoing illness and issues and permanent damage, even, or what seems like permanent damage that people suffer after even recovering. So an Oxford study just released in the last couple of days said that many COVID-19 survivors are likely to be at greater risk of developing mental illness. A psychiatrist said they did a large study. 20% of those infected with the virus were then diagnosed with a psychiatric disorder within 90 days, which is kind of terrifying because I had not before this heard about those kinds of, those kinds of like after effects.
Yeah, the long haulers have we understand enough now that we can do basic initial care. We've gotten so much better at that, which is great. But we don't actually understand this virus yet. Not in the sense of knowing how it works and why it's causing harm to certain people and who's getting long-term harm and why. We're still very early days in that part of the virus.
The last week or so, I have had a weirdly heightened sense of smell. Like everything is smelling weird to me.
Anti-COVID.
Well, here's the thing. I was like, every cologne my husband wears, I'm like, I can't take it. I've been unplugging my little air fresheners I have around the house. And my husband looked it up and he's like, okay, apparently a heightened sense of smell could be COVID, but also a lack of smell is COVID.
This is the worst part. Well, not the worst part. One of the worst parts about COVID is that literally anything can be a sign of COVID.
Yeah. All right. We got to stop.
Heightened sense of smell too? Are you serious? That's not fair.
I was surprised to hear that. But I guess, like you said, anything and nothing, right? That's what COVID could be. Anything and nothing.
My toe hurts. Is it COVID? Maybe. Actually, wait. There were COVID toes was a thing.
Yes. I have some vague recollection of COVID toes as being a thing. Look, unless you hit it, yeah, keep an eye on it. All right. So let's talk about where we are with the election. So right now,
we're done with it. That's where
we're done. The election's over. Biden has won. Biden has won in a way. The electoral vote count right now is at 290 to 217. Biden leads by more than 5 million votes. Trump has no chance at all at taking this anymore, but there's not a day that goes by that he's not tweeting multiple times a day that he still won. His tweets are getting flagged left and right. And
that part doesn't concern me. Like, there is literally no universe where that wasn't going to happen. Like, that was just
really
a given. Yeah, him tweeting that that was always going to happen. He was never, ever, ever going to concede and never going to act like he didn't really win. Like, that part was never in doubt. What I'm surprised about is the response. Not
the
even
GOP.
His fault. not from his followers even. Like, I had fears that if it was a closer vote, then his followers would refuse to accept it. But that's not where the momentum's coming from. Like, it's not actually the base or the supporters that are making this delusion go on that the election's not over. It is the high-ranking GOP.
Yeah, I think that part, and I don't know why it surprised me. We should have seen this coming, but
it surprised me too.
Yeah, I thought there's a line, right? There's a line, but there's a couple different things going on. So yeah, it might not, obviously, you know, the delusion might be coming from the base, but the base is eating up the delusion. I mean,
they're going to go along with it, but yeah, they're not what's driving it. It's not like the GOP is being forced into this position by their base. Like, the mobs are saying, you can't back down. They're like, well, I guess we're going to take this. No, they're the one, it's top down. They're the ones putting this narrative out, and the base is following it, obviously.
Well, Mitch McConnell's like, you know, the results are not official until the electoral college meets. That's in December, and you know, until then, this is just the media calling it. You've had numerous senators just say to the media, nope, I won't call him president-elect yet, Biden president-elect. Trump has ordered every single agency against meeting. He's not allowing the transition team to begin working, Biden's transition team, which is really unusual because it causes like a gap in like efficiency and all kinds of things. Like if they can't get to work until January 20th, like they've lost weeks and weeks of time and waits to like set stuff up, move things over. There's a huge national security concern there.
At least it's a good thing we have a president-elect who is at least familiar with the job and not starting cold.
Exactly. Yeah, no, Biden, I mean, he's been steeped and he's like an old school national security person. I mean, like he knows, you know,
he knows
the system really well. Yeah. And you know, they've been relatively calm about this whole thing. He was like, this isn't, when he was asked about Trump not conceding, he's like, it's embarrassing. But beyond that, it seems like they're just getting their ducks in a row. Melania has refused to meet Dr. Jill Biden.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So I think that Biden, his approach to this is the right one. I think that his dismissal, his like calm, his like, meh, whatever. That's the right route. But I also think that's a show that has to be done. That doesn't mean that's actually what's going on. Like, that doesn't mean that this is actually a big nothing that we'll just get. This is actually hugely dangerous for the country. Its long-term effects will undermine democracy in America. I mean, it ain't great, y'all.
Oh, this is, I think, yeah, this is unprecedented. I think the whole world is like astonished in this. And like, I mean, this is going to, it kind of sets the scene for this happening over and over again.
There will never be an election in America again that I can see, not in our lifetimes. I hope I'm wrong, but I don't see it happening in our lifetimes. Well, you'll have an election where both sides agree as to what happened.
You really think so? God, I'm just hoping in the next 4 years there'll be some normalization.
But how's it get better from here?
I don't know. Well, so, you know, one of the reasons apparently that the top GOP leadership right now are not out and out conceding is because they recognize that they still need Trump's base, maybe, to get votes out in Georgia, because the runoff in Georgia with two senators there is going to be really, really important. I mean, it could change the balance of power in the Senate, which arguably might be more important than the presidential election itself. And so they're kind of like in this catch-22. Although here's what I think. I mean, this is what I'm wondering. Like, if they're telling their base that there's so much fraud in this election, which is what they're alleging, basically. So many different kinds of fraud. Dead people voting three times, illegals voting. I mean, you could just name it. Then wouldn't that disincentivize their voters to be like, okay, I'm going to go out now and vote again in this other election? If I was one of them, I'd be like, yeah. I feel like it'll backfire.
And it's just the same way that being against mail-in voting would discourage their own supporters from voting, and some of them wouldn't vote at all because of it. So yeah, there's definitely a cost to themselves from it.
But apparently that's what's kind of animating this whole thing, that they are like, we still need the Trump voters to go out and help us here. And so we're not, and the money. Oh, that's another thing, is like they've launched this Trump election legal defense fund that they're now fundraising for. And it's such a grift. Have you read about this?
So my email is a common one, and people who are Susan Simpson, but not me, love to use my email to sign up for all kinds of stuff. So I am signed up to all the Trump listservs. Thank you, other Susan Simpsons of the world. So I see them. I see the hourly messages from Don Jr. and Eric and Melania and VP Pence and Trump saying like,
shit, it's been a long 4 years. Help protect the election. I didn't know you've been dealing with this for 4 years now.
I'll unsubscribe and then they just come back again and that's where we are. All right, here, I'm checking right now. We have Laura Trump, protecting election integrity. Join the task force. Just more of this nonsense. Like, it's more than every hour. It's asking for money.
Constantly.
And guess what? That money isn't actually going for the stuff like 2020 election related. Right. Most of it isn't anyway.
Right. A good chunk of it is going to go to pay his campaign debts.
Well, that. But primarily, it's going to the new super PAC. Or the new PAC is trying to do. To plan for 2024, God knows what. Mm-hmm. So it's a grift.
So, you know, Lindsey Graham, I mean, he is just notorious for begging for money, but he was on Laura Ingraham the other night, and this was so, I'm really shocked, actually, at seeing the video. She was asking him about the Senate, the Georgia runoffs, and she's like, you know, how can our viewers, like, support these candidates? And he's like, well, you can go to lindseygraham.com, and you can make a donation there, and then we will disperse those funds to the candidates. And she's like, no, how do they directly support? He's like, well, he's like, no, just go to lindseygraham.com. And you know what she said to him? She's like, okay, enough with the lindseygraham.com. You sound like a used car salesman. She actually said that to him.
Yeah, she's pretty snarky. And she's tired of her own shit. She does, which is usually...
Well, they're throwing everything they can at the wall. But we got to talk about, last Saturday is when the election was kind of officially called. Like, this, like, it's over now. He has no path forward. And this happened to coincide exactly the same time as this amazing press conference that Rudy Giuliani.
It was glorious.
What the hell was that? What happened? I have so many, like, I've been laying awake at night thinking.
We still don't know.
What happened?
So the story is, I've seen it, like the official story is that what they're still going with is that this was not an accident. Like, for some reason, Giuliani had a press conference in Philly, you know, to do election fraud, whatever nonsense. And he chose to have it at the Four Seasons Total Landscaping.
Parking lot.
Which is between like a crematorium and a sex shop. I mean, you couldn't write this story. So when Trump tweets it out, like, he's like, Four Seasons going to have a press conference. Like, Four Seasons Hotel is like, wait, what? No, everyone's wrong. So he tweets like 10 minutes later or 20 minutes later. He's like, oh, Four Seasons Total Landscaping. So
he first tweeted Four Seasons, then he said it's going to be 11 a.m. Then I don't know how, a little bit later, it is Saturday morning, he tweeted, he said it's a big, like, a, you know, a big press conference, a really important press conference. He was out golfing, by the way, while this was happening. And then he said, it's at 11:30. And then he corrected it.
Coincidentally, perhaps, the drive from the Four Seasons Hotel, Four Seasons Total Landscaping, is about half an hour. So we still don't, the story they're going with, and I haven't seen anyone contradict it yet, is that actually this was intentional. They wanted to have this parking lot at this place be their place to... And then there was confusion because the name's similar. No, I still am waiting for that story to break. It's going to happen. Someone tried to book the Four Seasons Hotel and called the wrong place.
Well, here's the thing. Apparently, Trump tweeted that. And then the Four Seasons Hotel started getting blasted with calls from reporters asking, like, where, what, whatever, how do they set up? And they're like, no, it's not us. And when they made it clear it's not us, then somehow, at that point, maybe that it was like the campaign realized, oh, shit, nobody actually booked the Four Seasons, but now we got to... I don't know why they didn't think, we'll just reschedule this, like, maybe for another day or at another hotel. And they just went with, we're just going to stick to the Four Seasons theme. But I also want to know who picked up the phone at the Four Seasons Total Landscaping and said, press conference in our parking lot? Sure. You can book. Like, what?
How would you not think you're being prank called?
I know. I don't know. The whole thing's so crazy.
If they just said yes? They're like, wait, okay, this is probably a prank, but sure, I'll say yes. And then Giuliani, like, waltzes up. You're like, well, okay, this is happening now.
Look, there's a Pulitzer in there for whatever reporter figures this shit out, because nobody still understands how this story happened. And nobody at Four Seasons Total Landscaping. By the way, they got a nice little tweet out by Corey how do you say his last name?
Lewandowski.
Lewandowski the next day, like plugging them. Maybe that was like how they got paid. But so what happened to the press? Literally nothing. Like nothing happened.
Well, he got, Giuliani got the news.
Well, that happened.
While live, that the election was called by the networks. And I think part, I mean, it's a great story, but I think part of why it was such an amazing little glorious nugget was that it felt at the time like maybe this is the last Trump story. Like,
right.
Maybe this is the last nonsense that we really have to care about.
This is how they go out. They go out on this story, yeah.
I mean, it still is, but unfortunately not quite so much as I would have wanted because, yeah. After that, like they ramped up again with this whole nope, election's not over nonsense. And it's all, oh God, it's so maddening because this is how reality doesn't matter to the Trump administration or Trump himself. Like it's all about the bullshit. It's all about BSing right through. And sure, they might, obviously some things are harder to BS through like than others, like an election result. But at least the narrative, they're still able to do that. They're still able to win supporters. They're still able to go on the news and be like, yep, we actually won. They're still kind of, it's still being fought. Like, there's no result yet. None of it's true. There's no reality to it whatsoever. And yet people who think they're reasonable all over the country are out there like, oh, I guess it's not over yet. I guess it doesn't mean that there's a legitimate basis to challenge it or there's a theoretical basis that the results could change. No, there's not. There just is not. Not legally, not as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
But don't get complacent with that because that it's not like democracy is like a law of physics. Things don't have to follow democratic rules. Like that's what they're going for now. And in a year like 2020, where literally anything can happen, like, God, what if some chaos was inflicted now? Like, it's not impossible that their stunt could work.
I mean, it's such a long shot. I mean, okay, look, so yeah, like you said, yeah, GOP leadership, much of them are staying silent. Many of them are just saying, we're just going to wait till the electoral college
makes. They're waiting to see if it works out. They're like, well, okay, let's see it. Let's let it play out. Like, if Trump can do this, then cool. If not, whatever.
You really think so? I mean, I really feel like they're just like, okay, their excuse is we're going to wait till the electoral college meets. But there's a different theory. There are different theories about what's really happening. For some, it's like, he knows he can't win, but this is a way for him to save face. In fact, there have been anonymous sources, obviously, senior aides and stuff, and people inside the White House saying, listen, we're all playing along so that, like, basically to, like, temper his tantrum and make him feel better about himself. And this is just one big, like act. We're all acting. It's like his own Truman Show, you know, just to make him feel better about himself. We know none of this is going to work.
I'm sure it's true for some of them. I'm sure some of them in there are justifying this to themselves with that line.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that's the whole story.
But the problem is this, though. I mean, even if they were doing that, Trump is taking this shit seriously. Trump is not playing this game. Trump told the White House Budget Office has told federal agencies, I think this is shocking, to continue preparing the Trump administration's budget proposal for the next year. Okay, now, normally what happens is the budget proposals are issued in February, which would be after Biden is inaugurated. But he's like, no, you're going to go forward with our budget proposal. And all the agencies are like, okay. And so they're already like on task to do that. You have Pompeo, who a couple days ago said during a briefing, you know, he was asked, are you prepared for a smooth transition? And he's like, yeah, we're prepared for a smooth transition to Trump's second administration. Then he said, he was kind of joking, but not.
He wasn't joking.
Yeah.
I mean, he was being, that's not a joke. That is him knowing he can't say anything else. Does he recognize how absurd it is? Possibly, quite possibly. But also that is not a joke. He is refusing to say the truth because he knows Trump would lose his shit over it.
You know, here's what's crazy to me, Susan. Somebody like Pompeo is a horrible human being, but he's not stupid. He can look at what's happening in the courts. He can look at what's happening in state by state, like the margins. And he can be like, there's absolutely no way I'm going to have a job after January 20th. It's not worth it.
Because the job he wants is 2024, so...
Oh, God, I don't even want to talk about 2024. All right. But let's talk a little bit about what's happening in the states and where, as far as I know, I think 10 or 11 or 12 lawsuits so far have been filed and thrown out for various reasons. But we do now know that Georgia has kind of, I mean, the Georgia Secretary of State has been under a lot of pressure. He's agreed to do a hand recount.
Which is meaningless.
Yeah, it won't make the kind of difference that they need.
Well, also, Georgia's system is actually atrocious. There's absolutely no sign whatsoever of any kind of fraud or forgeries or anything like that. But the election system itself in Georgia ain't ideal. And there's no real security to it. So like this whole audit thing or this whole hand count, it's kind of a farce.
It's not for the whole state, right? It's like
and it's not even a hand count. It's not like they're going through. They're just using computer results that have no trail to them. So it's not great, but it's also not going to change a thing.
Yeah. None of it's going to change. Look, in Pennsylvania, Biden has a 50,000 vote lead. The Trump team is challenging 10,000 of those votes. So it doesn't even matter. I mean, the lieutenant governor the other day was interviewed. And he's like, listen, you give him the 10K. Biden still wins. Like, you know, it doesn't matter. In Michigan, Biden has a 150,000 vote lead. And Trump is actually asking the court there to do a do-over of all the absentee vote counts in Michigan and to block the state from certifying the election. In Arizona, there's apparently less than 200 votes at question. And interestingly enough, there's, I think, a new lawsuit being filed they're expecting today. But before filing it, the lawyer that's representing Donald Trump's reelection team asked the judge to seal the evidence, meaning use like a secret evidence, like that which is used in national security cases often, to seal the evidence so nobody can see it, including the election officials and the defendants. But he rejected that request. So I don't know if that lawsuit's going to be filed today or whatever. But
look, I'm a lawyer. I love procedural chicanery. I love all the, you know, fucking the legal wrangling.
Like that.
Like that's interesting to me inherently. Like that kind of thing I'm normally into.
But yeah, it's like chess. It's legal chess.
I don't
right?
give a fucking shit here because none of it matters. It's not like they're playing. The legal stuff isn't the point. Like there is no legally, none of what's being done in the courts matters. Like, it can't get the relief it's seeking. It cannot matter for the votes or the election. Like that's not the point. The lawsuits are there to support the narrative. That's it. Full stop.
Right. Well, yes, but also, I mean, again, now this is something that was raised last week, but there are some who are theorizing that the strategy here is not to win the lawsuits, but it's just to cast enough doubt that they can find the judges to block states from certifying the voters and then have, you know, the legislations of that those states then pick the electors who will vote in the Electoral College. It also seems highly, highly unlikely. Like, it's just not going to happen. It's such a long shot. In Pennsylvania, they're like, we're just not going to do it. I mean, you know, the voters choose the electors.
They just can't. Like, the plan ain't great. It's not the most solid plan for overturning democracy. Yeah. I mean, that's, I guess, something of a relief. Doesn't change the underlying dynamics of how fucked America is long term. But, like, this is not a great plan they've got on here.
They are muddying up. I mean, just like, you know, I saw my father over the weekend, and my father he voted for Biden and he's a liberal. And he was just like, when I saw him, it was on Sunday and I saw him Saturday, actually, after the election had been called. And I was like, so happy. It was such a great day. And he's like, yeah, but, you know, they're saying there's a lot of fraud in this election. I'm like, Dad, not you. But it's being reported even in the Pakistani news, which is what my dad follows here on YouTube. But yeah, it's really people have lost a lot of trust in this thing.
You know who's got to be really sad right now?
Who?
Paul Manafort. He would love this shit.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean,
this was the shit he was made for, and he's at home arrest right now.
He was made for the chaos, I guess, yeah.
This was his time to shine, and, you know, a little...
Bannon's loving it.
Bannon is enjoying his time while he can.
right. But just to be clear for those who might be wondering, I thought this was a great piece and it took a lot of work to do. The New York Times, they contacted election officials in every single state. 45 of those states responded and they said that there is absolutely zero evidence of any kind of fraud or anything like systemic irregularities that would lead to like the vote actually being overturned or recounts or anything like that. And that's it. I mean, like 5 states didn't respond directly, but you know, of that, the 45 were like, there's just nothing there. We have minor issues, seamless election, but they're trying. So on Tuesday, apparently, the lieutenant governor in Texas announced a $1 million fund to reward reports of voter fraud. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. In America, the fraud in the elections is never during the counts. Mm. That shit happens before. It's about suppression, exclusion,
yeah,
like dark money interest, like
yeah,
playing games with candidates and like who's on the ballot. But like the votes themselves, that is not where the game is played in America.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about, this is kind of, it seems like an important story. And actually, it's a hugely important story. And I think it's maybe where we should be paying attention, because we know these lawsuits are not going to fly. I'm fairly confident with 99% conviction that the Electoral College, when it's votes in December 14th, will give the election to Biden. However, I don't know what Trump's doing at DOD. So like, basically in 24 hours, he just like fired a bunch of top officials at DOD. Esper, the top defense intelligence official, their policy guy, the chief of staff, the defense secretary, all out within a matter of like 24 hours.
Yeah, that's less than optimal to have a outgoing president who is claiming victory to decapitate civilian leadership at DOD, who could theoretically oppose him and install his little lackeys and yes men. Not even worse than that, like his active, like the people who are in charge of leading the fraud and will happily do it are now in right. charge of DOD. So
I thought they were lackeys anyways, but I guess they're like super too. Lackeys.
These are the competent and these are the lackeys who actually organize stuff on their own and carry it out theoretically.
Okay.
Lackeys with initiative.
Got it. Okay. So walk us through this. What happened here?
So before the election, Trump was talking about how for a second term, he wanted to go ahead and fire like almost everyone. Not everyone, but a lot of people who were heading cabinets and agencies, notably like Esper at DOD, Haspel at CIA, and then Wray, FBI director. And even though he was not elected to a second term, he's like, well, you know, hell, I'm going to hell with it anyway. So he fires Esper. He puts in, oh my God, Ezra Cohen Watnick, I think is one of the ones he put in. That's like the old Nunes, the Flynn person.
Yeah.
From like 2017. Blast from the past there. Yeah, like, okay, on the one hand, like, it's very reasonable to, like, consider the worst here and be at least alert to the possibility. He's trying to secure his hold over the military for reasons that are extremely uncomfortable in a democracy.
Like, he's going to order them into the streets? I mean, like, what? Vote's over.
We already know he's trying to get DOD to fire on protesters. So, like, that's not someone – I don't want his people in charge there anymore. The other possibility that was floated, which is almost more comforting in a way, is that they're there not to – stop the election, but to do the cover-up and to make sure that whatever I think I like that theory because it makes me feel more better.
So I don't quite understand this theory. I don't understand this theory. So is a theory that there is stuff there that he needs these people to go in and destroy, stuff that like is bad for him, stuff that like, let's say his communications with Putin, like what are we trying to cover up here? What's going on?
Well, the goal would be for us not to find out. And again, like if it's not that, then like the options are bad. So I think that's why people have kind of gone to this theory now.
Well, the Washington Post had an interesting theory. Apparently, if this is why he did this, it's so goddamn petty and ridiculous, but at the same time dangerous, which is, I don't know, he managed to do all that at the same time. Apparently, well before the election, in the weeks leading up to the election, there was this huge battle that was going on inside the administration and also after the election that Trump wanted to declassify like all this intel related to Putin, that Putin supported Trump. But if he declassified certain documents and intelligence, it would prove that the Russian hoax never, like that it was a hoax and it didn't really actually happen, that he's still obsessed with this. So CIA Director Gina Haspel, apparently there was a meeting last month at the White House and she was arguing against disclosing the information. She said it would compromise her sources, the intelligence agency sources. Then Attorney General Barr defended her. Then the U.S. Cyber Command, General Paul Nakasone also said, you cannot do this, cannot declassify. Esper then wrote a letter to John Ratcliffe, the ODNI director, and said, please do not, we cannot release this information. It would harm national security and have specific harm to the military. So one theory that the Washington Post posits is that he got rid of all these people because he needs the people in place to declassify the shit that would prove that he did not collude with Russia in 2016. I mean, really?
There's obviously something going on with some secret that is big and important and seems to have to do with like Trump's like quest to prove like there was no Russian interference in the election, and that he wants it released, but literally everyone else, like even people who are on his side, don't want it out for a reason.
Yeah.
I think we don't have the context yet to make full sense of what that is, but yeah, that's definitely the backdrop for a lot of this and for some of his raging right now. But whatever it is, it seems like even those who are normally pro-Trump and pro-Trump's nonsense are like, no, we can't release this.
I mean, the thing is they can urge him, but all he has to do, he can just tweet a picture, an image of the document, and it's been declassified. I mean, like,
it's probably not a document. It's probably more complex. It's probably more nuanced. Not something he could actually just, like, put out there and have it make the impact he wants or be understood in the way he wants.
Listen, nuance doesn't work for Trump. He will just, like, get a Sharpie and a piece of paper and be like, this is what happened.
Yeah, and probably you need, like, the actual, like, assessment or the report describing the meaning of the underlying intel, whatever it is.
But the point is, he doesn't need any of these people to approve it. He can just do it, right? So that's the thing. Like, I mean, there are people are saying that Gina Haspel's is probably going to be out too.
She has more powerful allies than Esper did. Although Esper had powerful allies too, so I don't know. But, well, Haspel's ally is
Mitch McConnell.
Yeah. They had this silly 20-minute meeting at his office, which clearly was not a meeting. It was
just a display.
Yeah. It was a show of force. It was like, it was some, palace intrigue stuff.
But Trump has nothing to lose right now. He's flailing on his way out. It serves his narrative to show that from the beginning, I have been conspired against to this election. From the impeachment to this Russian thing to this election, it's all been one big conspiracy. So for him to declassify whatever it is he wants to declassify, he doesn't give a shit if how it harms the nation or the military or anybody.
Well, I think what a lot of his advisors right now are trying to do is to convince him he does have something to lose. 2024. I think Lindsey Graham, 2024, a media empire, being a kingmaker in the GOP, they're trying to make him think that, like, yeah, he has big, important things he needs to hold on to. And I think Trump is not buying it. Hmm. He's like, no, I need to be the president. And he just, like, does he really want the job, or does he just want to be, just can't handle the idea of losing?
I mean, I think also maybe he's worried about, like, you know, what it could do. Like, if he doesn't think he himself would be exposed to prosecution, maybe his kids might be, right?
All he has to do is announce he's running for 2024. And then, I mean, it'll be effectively impossible anyone, even states, to try and interfere with him.
Yeah.
He'll claim it is, yeah.
And he'll start fundraising again and doing rallies.
So honestly, like, I'm sure someone in there is like, sir, look how great it's going to be. You can just campaign for 4 years. You don't have to do shit. You get money. You can go around the country giving rally. Yeah. It'll be awesome.
Trump has apparently also told people, and I actually believe this, that he's been offered around like $100 million to write a book.
That's how it always works.
Which is just makes me, you know, I was shocked at that figure until I realized Michelle Obama got $65 million. I did not know that.
I mean, if Trump actually had to write every word of it, I might read out of just sheer curiosity. Other than that, I don't care.
He's not going to write it, obviously. I know. But you're right. He has a lot of money-making potential. It also would allow him to launch whatever media. I mean, they can continue to poison and poison and poison the ether going forward. Apparently, there are reports that Don Trump Jr. and his girlfriend are interested in, like taking over the RNC, or they want to get involved with the RNC or something. Like, they really have their hooks in the GOP right now, in the Republican Party.
And they were slang floated today about how they're going to try and, like, take down Fox and be the new conservative news, which, whatever. Murdoch's going to outplay them.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, if Trump says to his supporters, that's it, leave Fox, you think they won't abandon Fox? I feel like they will.
I don't think they will. They might watch his show, too, but, like, they like the blingy Fox graphics and the anchors are familiar with. No, that's not going to be that easy. He can maybe take some market share out, but he ain't going to replace them.
I will say this, because I keep thinking, what will stop this? What will stop Trump? I thought, you know, losing an election, we'd be done. He's not going to be done. He's going to continue to be there. We don't have to pay attention to him, obviously, but he's going to...
That's fine. If he just gets out and just goes away, I mean, he'd still be noisy all he wants. We don't have to pay attention.
It's fine until 2024. But yeah, I mean, the question is this, is the Republican Party prepared to have all of their other candidates completely frozen out? If he says he's going to run, I mean, like, who's going to... I mean, yeah, they can prime, but he's going to win their primary again. If he's... I guess death is the only thing that could stop years. Him. Yeah, I was going to say death. And I actually don't think that the kids have the kind of power that he commands. I don't think they would have the ability to recreate what he did.
Don Jr. is just way too incompetent, and Ivanka doesn't have the base support.
Yeah.
I guess Tiffany's always there, waiting in the wings.
Yeah, did you see that Matt Gaetz tweet, by the way?
Oh, my God.
Creepy. For those who haven't seen it, he retweeted a picture of, just last night, of Tiffany from the election night party in her red suit with, like, little emojis, like heart and fire and love emojis. Strange.
Creeper.
Uncomfortable. I can see Tiffany. She's going to be a lawyer. You never know. Oh, Lord. All right. Okay, I guess that's it for us this week, right?
Yes, and we'll still be here for a little while.
We'll be back next week for sure, and then we'll see. We're going to pace it out until
that inauguration.
Yeah. Oh, one last note. I have heard there are rumors that on January 20th, Trump, if Biden is actually getting inaugurated, is planning his own counter rally. Oh, this bastard. Dear. All right. Okay. All right, Susan. Thanks so much. And thank you guys for tuning in. We'll be back in 7 days.
See you then.
A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan. And you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is @45thpod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.